Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. The SANE curriculum. Well, before we start reading about the SANE curriculum, let's refresh ourselves about what the INSANE curriculum is. The INSANE curriculum is the ego's curriculum, which, as we found last week, is summed up in the words, seek and do not find. Seek and do not find by looking for what you're looking for where it can't be found. And although that does mean that if you're looking for love from someone who is so self-centered and preoccupied with him or herself that he or she is incapable of responding for love, the real meaning of looking for love where it cannot be found is if you're looking for it in your own separated sense of being, your own independent sense of self, if you are looking for it in a state of isolation and aloneness because you have divorced yourself from your source, you are looking where it can't be found. It can't be found in your very own isolation from the wholeness of existence, the wholeness of being. The only place you can look for love is from your union with your source. The only place you can look for love is not out there somewhere, but from the place of excellence in you, your right mind. When you are not looking from the unity of your being, of your essential consciousness, when you're looking for love, not from the excellence of you, you will not be able to find it. Now, the same curriculum. Only love is strong because it is undivided. It isn't that it's strong because it has a lot of power. It's strong because it's not fragmented. It's strong because in its singularity, in its indivisibility, there is the conscious experience of invulnerability. In the absence of chaos, there is peace. Why? Because peace is the fundamental nature of being. It is what is real. And when you have no other preference on your mind, no other preferred way of looking at reality, and you are introducing nothing extraneous to it, your mind is at peace, and your mind is singular, and the experience of invulnerability is patently obvious to you. It is strong because in its presence there is no opposite to exercise itself upon. Only love is strong because it is undivided. The strong do not attack because they see no need to do so. Before the idea of attack can enter your mind, you must have perceived yourself as weak. Happens to you every day. When you are roused to attack, or another way of putting it is, when you are roused to defend yourself, when you are aroused to take control, it is because you are feeling vulnerable. Vulnerable to an assertive friend, vulnerable to an angry employer, vulnerable to an assertion of will that puts you at a disadvantage that you believe is real. When you feel weak, is it your first spontaneous response to say, I better get back in my peace? I better get back in my right mind as quickly as I can, so that I can respond to what is going on intelligently without bringing up my habitual use of force. No. When you feel confronted, you slip back into your habit of doing whatever it takes to get control of the situation again so that you will not feel vulnerable. It's important to understand this. Your habit of exercising control is connected to your feeling of weakness, which you inevitably feel because you have gotten a divorce from your father. You've said, I want to see things my way. I want to give the definitions. I want to give the meaning. That arena of being is one in which you are weak because, as we've discussed in the last couple of weeks, your birthright box is empty. You do not feel your birthright. Existence itself is an ever-present statement of your weakness, which is, of course, the challenge you've taken on to rise above. And of course, the attempt to achieve the equivalent of a birthright is one of the processes of seeking and not finding. Before the idea of attack can enter your mind, you must have perceived yourself as weak. Because you had attacked yourself and believed that the attack was effective, you behold yourself as weakened. Again, because you had attacked yourself by deciding to get a divorce from your source. And you believe that you actually accomplished it, you behold yourself as weakened. No longer perceiving yourself and all your brothers as equal, and regarding yourself as weaker, you attempt to equalize the situation you have made. You use attack to do so, because you believe that attack was successful in weakening you. Some time back we were talking about the fact that you are neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You are at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. Now I want to point out something about the ego. It does the same thing. You, the ego, you, when you're not experiencing your union with the Father, create a definition of yourself. You say, I, on my own, am worthwhile. I have substance. I have character. I have strength. And if I develop a collection of ideas that reflect excellent logic, so that the truth of the collection of ideas stands clearly forth as reasonable, I can demonstrate the fact that I have integrity all by myself. You claim something ultimate about yourself, and you let that be the bottom line of everything else that comes forth from you. And then you proceed to nudge, coerce, browbeat, and enforce your brothers and sisters in whatever way you can to arrive at agreement with you. You start, the ego starts, with a concept of integrity. And then lets all further actions embody that in the attempt to make it so when it isn't so. I'm bringing this out because if you can begin to see that when I have said you are neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it, that you're at that point and must understand yourself therefrom, this is nothing really foreign to you. You're already employing it, we'll say, in the negative. You're already employing it within the domain of seek and do not find. Now, you know what? When you behave on this basis, you have gotten into righteousness. Self-righteousness. You claim righteousness for yourself, and then you force your brothers to agree with you in order to make it so when it isn't so all by yourself. Righteousness, because it is ego-satisfying, is what hooks you when you are attacked or when you perceive attack or you experience strong confrontation from a brother. Righteousness is what causes you to say, I can handle this. I don't need to go outside myself. I don't have to join with something else. In my state of independence, I can handle it. And so, out of spontaneous habit, you respond with attack. You respond with an expression of force, with an expression of coercion. You become confrontational so as to bring about equalization between you and the apparent source of the confrontation. This is why, even as we are talking about the need to break the isolation, you find yourselves during the day, when stress occurs, immediately resorting to, quote, what has worked for you before, or what you have confidence has worked for you before, and so you slip right back into being offended and retaliating through the use of force that you bring up from the bottom of the puniness of you, instead of doing what will work. Understand that this is the dynamic, so that you might recognize it and not be caught off guard quite so easily, or recover when you've been caught off guard more easily, so that you might say, oh, there I am, choosing to work within the fundamental insane curriculum of seeking and not finding. You use attack to do so, to equalize the situation, because you believe that attack was successful in weakening you. That is why the recognition of your own invulnerability is so important in the restoration of your sanity. That's why it's so important to remember that you're neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. For if you accept your invulnerability, you are recognizing that attack has no effect. If you are really divine, and you have never lost your divine status, and your birthright is still there in your birthright box, so to speak, then any attempt to see things in a confused way has not succeeded in changing you from what you are right at this moment. It has had no effect on you, and attack that you feel like employing against your brother can have no effect, and the confrontation from your brother can have had no effect, because neither you nor your brother are who you have imagined yourself to be, and you in your present, unalterable perfection, stand with each other in the truth of what you are. Continuing, although you have attacked yourself, and very brutally, you will demonstrate that nothing happened. Of course, when you're offended, when you're blown away by someone else's aggressive confrontation, or expressed unkindness toward you, you think that something has happened, and it is an ignorant perception. That's not the truth, but you believe it. It's just absolutely essential for you, in the process of your waking up, to constantly remind yourselves during your everyday activities that you have never stopped being what God is being right there where you are, and your brother has never stopped being what God is being right there where he is. And desire to have the experience of that rather than the experience you are having by virtue of looking at what's happening through your sense of your own orphanhood, which is not true either. Although you have attacked yourself, and very brutally, you will demonstrate that nothing happened. Therefore, by attacking, you have not done anything. Once you realize this, there is no longer any sense in attack, for it manifestly does not work. When you're in the thick of it, it's very difficult to shift gears. It's very difficult to let another perception in because you're so gosh darned convinced that you really are under threat and that someone else is responsible for it. And you must remind yourselves that the threat you're seeing, the feeling of vulnerability you're having, is not because of what your brother is doing, but the fact that you are looking at it and experiencing it without the calm perspective that your birthright, embraced and embodied by you, would reveal to you. Then you might still see your brother acting as though he doesn't know who he is, where a shift of perception is needed for him, but you will not see it as threatening to you. You will not see it as something that in any way would call for defense or return attack. Once you realize this, there is no longer any sense in attack, for it manifestly does not work and cannot protect you. Why can't it protect you? Because no protection is called for. You are invulnerable. What is happening is not threatening to your very being. Yet, the recognition of your invulnerability has more than negative value. In other words, it does more than show you that attack never worked and that attack never has caused anything. If your attacks on yourself have failed to weaken you, what? You are still strong. If your abandonment of your birthright has not caused you to become less than what you truly divinely are, less than what God is being right there where you are, then you're not the poor little pissant mortal that you every day believe you are in one way or another. In other words, you are not the weak one needing to become strong enough to equalize the situation. You are still at the point of perfection. The ultimate is the only thing happening right here, right now, and it is being you in ultimacy, in all that can ultimately find expression and experience right there where you are. You've got to remember, you're not working your way back up the ladder. If your attacks on yourself have failed to weaken you, you are still strong. So, there's a positive value in it. You therefore have no need to equalize the situation to establish your strength. You will never realize the utter uselessness of attack except by recognizing that your attack on yourself had no effects. So you see, before you start straightening out your brother, you've got to get your own head on straight. And you've got to find out what you did and didn't do. What you thought you did but didn't actually accomplish. You've got to come to a point where you're willing to consider yourself as absolutely divine right now, unaltered from what God is being right there where you are. And you have to let your sense of yourself be replaced by an infilling awareness of the wholeness of you that will happen spontaneously when you are willing to let go of the idea that you can handle things yourself. And that your self-righteousness is one of the biggest traps that faces you at any time during your day. And that your valuing of it and your reinforcing of it does nothing but keep you blinded to the already perfection, the already existing perfection of you. This is the only way shifts of perception are going to begin to be experienced by you. Because you bring a conscientious choice to bear upon the way you relate to your world, where you are choosing to come from as you observe everything that is going on. You have to start with yourself. You will never realize the utter uselessness of attack except by recognizing that your attack on yourself had no effects. Why? For others do react to attack if they perceive it. And if you're trying to attack them, you will be unable to avoid interpreting this, their reaction to your attack, as reinforcement. Reinforcement of what? Reinforcement of the idea that taking control through the use of force, through the sheer use of will, is valuable and does accomplish something. Does accomplish something while you are still a dedicated orphan. You see? The only place where you can cancel out all reinforcement is in yourself. For you are always the first point of your attack. Like a pilot of a plane once said to a potential passenger who was afraid of crashing, "Don't worry. The pilot is always the first one at the scene of the accident." The only place where you can cancel out all reinforcement is in yourself, for you are always the first point of your attack. Whatever mess occurs, you're the first one to arrive in the mess. For you are always the first point of your attack, and if this has never been, it has no consequences. The Holy Spirit's love is your strength. Why? Because it's singular. And it is you in your right mind experiencing the truth. And so there is no confusion in you when you let that register with you, which won't happen until you abandon your so-called right to be an independent agent for change, an independent creator, the Holy Spirit's love is your strength, for yours, as an orphan, is divided and therefore not real. You could not trust your own love when you have attacked it. You cannot learn of perfect love with a split mind, because a split mind has made itself a poor learner. You tried to make the separation eternal. In other words, your intent in getting the divorce was for it to be permanent. You tried to make the separation eternal because you wanted to retain the characteristics of creation with your own content. In other words, with everything you made up and everything you would in the future make up. The nature of creation is eternal. Creation is eternal, and you want to maintain that with your own creations. Yet creation, listen to this, creation is not of you. You're not God. Yet creation is not of you, and poor learners need special teaching. You have learning handicaps in a very literal sense. There are areas in your learning skills which are so impaired that you can progress only under constant, clear-cut direction provided by a capital T teacher who can transcend your limited resources. Transcend your tiny sense of orphanhood. He becomes your resource because of yourself you cannot learn. You, as a tiny little pissant orphan, poor little you, of yourself cannot learn. Because the state of mind which sees itself as weak and little cannot look where the truth can be found. Because it insists on looking and can only look within the narrow confines. Just a moment. Of isolation and aloneness. The learning situation in which you placed yourself when you got your divorce is impossible. And in this situation, you clearly require a special capital T teacher and a special curriculum. Poor learners are not good choices for teachers, either for themselves or for anyone else, which is one of the reasons that it's not a good idea to take on your brother as a student. When you have no resource from which to teach him, that's any better than the resource he already has. And if his resource is tiny, isolated aloneness, and yours is tiny, isolated aloneness, neither of you can learn anything new from each other. That's why we're getting our own heads on straight first. Poor learners are not good choices for teachers, either for themselves or for anyone else. You would hardly turn to them to establish the curriculum by which they can escape from their limitations. If they understood what is beyond them, they would not be handicapped. Now, as we read this, it sounds like a rather bleak picture of you But it's only a clear picture of the absurd, of the absurdity of the tiny way in which you're looking at yourself when you have another option available to you. And so it is not bleak because you're not stuck in it. And it's my task to remind you that there is a larger picture, that there is reality, and that you are not what you believe you are. You are at the point of perfection, and you must understand yourself therefrom. And my constant encouragement to you is not to believe this bleak picture and not to believe the definitions that you have come up with on your own, because there is something far greater for you to be experiencing, which it's your birthright to be experiencing. And any of the self-righteousness that you feel as a result of all of the great effort you put forth in being the best damned independent orphan that existed means nothing, accomplishes nothing, has accomplished nothing. And therefore you can afford to abandon it and question the hit you get from the feeling of self-righteousness. Now, I've been asking you to be alert for when you are offended. Next week, I want you to give your attention to when you feel self-righteous. Whether it's offense or whether it's self-righteousness, there's always inequity in the picture. Inequality. Someone's less than you, you're more than someone else. You're better than someone else. Or someone else is more offensive than you. Someone else is stronger than you. Therefore, you're weaker. Self-righteously, though, you are better and greater and stronger than they are. You see, there's always inequity, and always you engage in activities of equalizing, which simply means that the two of you end up in a struggle whereby you arrive at a point where you're worn out and you abandon the struggle in mutual agreement to take a rest. Not abandon the struggle, but to take a rest. Like arm wrestling. So you rest till you get your second wind, and then you get back to your offendedness or your self-righteousness. And all the time, you're functioning in the orphanage. When you're not an orphan at all. And you don't need to continue to be caught in the exhilarating drama of the overcoming of inequity. You do not know the meaning of love, and that is your handicap. Do not attempt to teach yourself, yourselves, what you do not understand. And do not try to set up curriculum goals where yours have clearly failed. Your learning goal has been not to learn. I realize you didn't think that was the case. But your learning goal has been not to learn, and this cannot lead to successful learning. The moment you saw yourself as an orphan, you began to experience yourself as a collection of thoughts, a streaming of ideas that can be identified as the ego. And the ego's insane curriculum is seek and do not find. Therefore, your learning goal has been not to learn when you're identified as an orphan. And this cannot lead to successful learning. You see, an orphan can never become a legitimate son or daughter of anything. The only thing that will be meaningful will be the realization that you are not, cannot have been, and never have been an orphan. That is the answer. And that answer comes from outside the arena of the concept of orphanhood. Your learning goal has been not to learn, and this cannot lead to successful learning. You cannot transfer what you have not learned. And the impairment of the ability to generalize is a crucial learning failure. Would you ask those who have failed to learn what learning aids are? What learning aids are for? They do not know. For if they could interpret the aids correctly, they would have learned from them. We have said that the ego's rule is seek and do not find. Translated into curricular terms, this is the same as saying, try to learn, but do not succeed. The result of this curriculum goal is obvious. Every legitimate teaching aid, every real instruction, and every sensible guide to learning will be misinterpreted. You know what that means? It means that whatever insight might be experienced, whatever sense might be made out of what's being taught, will immediately be translated into the language of orphanhood in orphan land, and will be put to use for the purposes that orphans employ, which is not to get out of the orphanage. You see? So every legitimate teaching aid, every real instruction, and every sensible guide to learning will be misinterpreted and misused. It happens every day with the Course. Something is read, a little light bulb goes on, and then it gets turned to the advantage of the so-called ego reading it, and that one believes that now he has some leverage of a higher nature and a more spiritual quality with which to coerce his brother into behavior that is more acceptable to the coercer than what it was before. The purpose of the Course is not to teach you how to be a better orphan and how to have a more fulfilling experience of being in an orphanage. The purpose is to get you out of the orphanage. The purpose is to reveal to you that the very concept of an orphanage is meaningless because there are no orphans. Every legitimate teaching aid, every real instruction, and every sensible guide to learning will be misinterpreted, for they are all for learning facilitation, which this strange curriculum goal, the ego's, is against. If you are trying to learn how not to learn, and are using the aim of teaching to defeat itself, what can you expect but confusion? The curriculum does not make sense. This kind of learning has so weakened your mind that you cannot love. For the curriculum you have chosen is against love and amounts to a course in how to attack yourself. What is love? Love is what happens when you abandon your isolation and join with something else. Become intimate and with and undefended against something else, where you share without defense. But the ego's insane curriculum is intent upon maintaining boundaries. It is intent upon not joining. It is intent upon constantly reinforcing and resubstantiating isolation. Be sure that as you learn from the Course and your association with it, that you do not take what you are learning to be a better tool for a higher level of enforcing isolation. This kind of learning has so weakened your mind that you cannot love, for the curriculum you have chosen is against love and amounts to a course in how to attack yourself. Now, a necessary minor supplementing this major curriculum goal is learning how not to overcome the split which made this goal believable. In other words, the goal of the ego is seek and do not find. See separation. See isolation. And learn how to make it a better and better experience. A less and less uncomfortable experience, which of course is impossible. Now, that's what the ego's course teaches. The minor that needs to be added to that for purpose of explanation is that you will never look to the real problem to correct it. In other words, you will stay constantly preoccupied with tension and offense against your brother and self-righteousness against your brother without ever looking to see the fundamental postulate from which all of these behaviors arise, which is that you, which you've conveniently forgotten, have a father that you got a divorce from. And of course, that's what we're undoing by virtue of bringing it right out on the table and shining the light on it, so that even if you don't see how it is that that could have happened, how you could have done that, at least the idea is there, registering with you, for you to explore further. Because that's the beginning of the undoing of the basic mistaken postulate. Again, a necessary minor, like a major and a minor in college, a necessary minor supplementing this major curriculum goal is learning how not to overcome the split, the divorce from your father, which made this goal believable. And you cannot overcome it, for all your learning is on its behalf. Or it all has been on its behalf. Now you're beginning to weaken it by considering another option. Yet your will speaks against your learning, as your learning speaks against your will, and so you fight against learning and succeed, for that is your will. But you do not realize even yet that there is something you do will to learn, and that you can learn it because it is your will to do so. See, it's not all bad. I'll give you a few strokes. You need to remember that you're not behind the point of perfection. And so there is a will in you to be what you divinely are, no matter how you've altered your perception of your will to serve this false goal of seeking and not finding, of being, for lack of better words, of royal birth, but ignoring your birthright. You who have tried to learn what you do not will should take heart, for although the curriculum you set yourself is depressing indeed, it is merely ridiculous. You see, it's really inconsequential. It is not something to take so seriously. It's merely ridiculous. It's pure nonsense. And you need to lighten up regarding your assessment of the curriculum you've involved yourself in, and the coursework you've done, and the hours and lifetimes of lab work you've done, you see. Is it possible that the way to achieve a goal is not to attain it? Resign now as your own teachers. Oh, but that'll put you out of a job. Oh, but that'll put you out of an identity. Now, it'll put you out of an identification. Remember, we talked about the difference between an identification and identity. Identification is a concept, a picture you've drawn about yourself. And your identity is what is unchangeably. Resign now as your own teachers. This resignation will not lead to depression. And I'm going to qualify that. This resignation, if it's genuine, will not lead to depression. But if you're going to toy with it, if you're going to resign as your teacher to test the waters or to look good, and you do approach it with halfway decent sincerity, your ego is going to become very depressed. Because why? Because it will bring to your experience the perception of failure that we talked about last week. This resignation, if it is genuine, will not lead to depression. It is merely the result of an honest appraisal of what you have taught yourselves and of the learning outcomes which have resulted. But you see, it doesn't need to be depressing because it's merely ridiculous. You took a lot of time and you had a lot of fun doing the ridiculous. It caused no actual consequences. It didn't cause your father to disown you. So there's been no cost to it, except the cost of being ignorant of the truth about you and believing that your ignorance was an unpleasant experience that was real, that seemed to cause you actual suffering. But all that happened was a ridiculous endeavor. Under the proper learning conditions, which you can neither provide nor understand, you will become excellent learners and teachers. Let's read that again. Under the proper learning conditions, which you, as an orphan, can neither provide nor understand, you will become excellent learners and teachers. But it is not so yet, and will not be so until the whole learning situation, as you have set it up, is reversed. Oh boy, big project, huh? Until the whole learning situation is reversed. To reverse the learning situation is the equivalent of neglecting to look through the large end of the binoculars and turning them around to look through the small end of the binoculars. The reversal of the learning situation has entirely to do with something real simple. No longer approaching everything as an independent, tiny, little entity. All by yourself, isolated and alone. Abandoning that in favor of doing everything that you were doing alone, joined. So that the isolation is broken that causes your ignorance to constantly be reinforced. And instead having the experience of that which is nothing more than your right mind, the Holy Spirit, guiding you and teaching you how to see reality as it really is, instead of how it looks through the lens of orphanhood. You see? A miracle is a sudden shift of perception, not a sudden shift of activity, not a sudden shift of endeavors, not a new way of being with your brothers through mutual agreements, not hard work, but a willingness to look with innocent eyes, a willingness to look with fresh eyes that are led in what they see by the loving, supportive guidance of one who knows what is really there, who stands on behalf of your seeing what is really there, because it's your birthright, and who therefore stands in total support of you. You, who you truly are. Your learning potential, properly understood, is limitless because it will lead you to God. It will lead you to the conscious experience of that which is infinite. You can teach the way to Him and learn it if you follow the capital T teacher who knows it and his curriculum for learning it. The curriculum is totally unambiguous because the goal is not divided and the means and the end are in complete accord. In other words, seek and you will find is an endeavor. The goal and the result are in complete accord with each other. But to seek something and not find it is for the goal and the end result to not be in accord. You see? The curriculum is totally unambiguous because the goal is not divided and the means and the end are in complete accord. You need offer only what? Undivided attention. Your attention is God's treasure. So, to reverse the whole learning situation that you're caught in is accomplished by a very simple thing: your undivided attention. Your attention that's given to your encounter with your brother or your sister, or you're cleaning your house, or you're working on your car. You're engaging with everything with undivided attention, a willingness to be totally present, and to be present with it, with whatever you're experiencing, hand in hand, we'll say, or we could say mind in mind with your teacher. So that you are not spending a single moment interpreting what's happening. For your mind to no longer be divided into consciousness and the interpretation of what you're conscious of constitutes a singularity that allows what everything is to be experienced directly by you, because you are not exercising a right or a preference to see it in any way different from what it is, to see it without inserting your own little bias or torque to it, you see. Where you're willing to be with something without thinking that you, because of your unique separateness, can bring something extra to bear upon it that will add to it in any way. And when you arrive at that simplicity, you're left with what a thing really is. You will call it an experience of illumination. You will call it something of the equivalent of divine illumination. It will be an obviously holy experience to you, very different from the ones you had while you're making everything up and you are devoted to your own righteousness. You need offer only undivided attention. Everything else will be what? Given you. Yeah. Brings you right back to that insulting position of finding that you're a kept man or a kept woman. Nobody in your own right. Everything's given to you. With no ability to earn it for yourself. It's insulting, isn't it? Everything else will be given you. For it is your will to learn aright, and nothing can oppose the will of God's Son. His learning is as unlimited as He is. It's as unlimited as the one who's neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You know, another simple way of talking about bringing your undivided attention, which is really the key to becoming free of the baggage of misperceptions, is to say, be curious. This is not heavy-duty hard work that's going to take heavy machinery to blast you out of your rut. To bring undivided attention is to be willing to give up your feeling offended or your need for defense long enough to just simply be really curious. Curiosity means an invitation to be aware of what you haven't been aware of before. It's an act of faith with confidence that lets you dare to be undefended enough to have an experience of delight. And that's what this is all about. I love you all. And I look forward to being with you next week. Two things. Be alert this week for when you employ righteousness. And also, remember to be curious frequently. Abandon all the self-preservation. Abandon the need to be serious. Abandon the need to defend yourself, even if it's just for moments during your day, but maybe 100 moments where you just say, okay, for a moment I'm going to be curious. Because that's the key. Okay.